Hey everybody, welcome to the 10 Laws podcast with East Forest. This is a shorter bonus episode. I went to the Harvest Festival here in our fair city of Boulder, Utah, Boulder Town, which is something we do every year in October usually. And, you know, we're only a town of 200 people, but we really enjoy this festival. People come in from some neighboring areas and friends, and it's just a time to celebrate the harvest season and kind of basically have a giant potluck. That's probably one of the best potlucks, period. I mean, imagine everyone bringing their favorite dish, and we've probably got this giant, giant long table out there. It's over at the Red House Farm here in town. And we do lots of primitive skills, teaching for one another to kind of build resiliency, sort of in the transition town movement style here in our town. So it's a lot of fun. It's a good time to see people, good time to pick up some new skills and just make some new connections before the end of the season. And this year we have some speakers too. And our friend Matt Cochran, who was the third episode of the 10 Laws podcast, Mr. Raven Dream Tracking, who lives here in town, good friend of mine. He wrote a speech, sort of an essay slash speech slash story slash poetry. And it was really beautiful. So we were sitting around the fire and I said, you know, we should record that. So he came over and we had a chance for him to put it to tape. And I put a little music behind it. And that's what I'm going to play you today. This is Matt Cochran's keynote speech from the Boulder Harvest Fest. Just super brief before we get into that, I just want to thank, I noticed a couple reviews came in since the last podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed that meditation. Country Kelly said, it's one of my favorite podcasts and I look forward to enjoying it each week. I greatly appreciate this new story, East Forest. And thank you so much for writing a review, especially on iTunes, just popping down and just typing in a few sentences. You can say whatever you want, and I'll probably read it here on the air. You can also just send in your questions and comments to info@eastforest.org, because it really helps. It helps me know that it's resonating, and it helps other people who might want to check out this new story actually click on it and see what's up. But I'm taking off on Thursday this week because I'm heading out to Colorado. I hope to see you guys if you're out in that area. I'll be in Durango on Thursday and Denver on the weekend and Grand Junction too. So those are East Forest ceremony events. And I think the one in Grand Junction's more of a concert. I'm giving a talk for the suicide awareness function they have going on there, which is it's important, dear to my heart. So anyway, I'm looking forward to getting out there, especially to Colorado. I haven't been back since being there with Trevor Hall about a year ago. So please do tell your friends. And otherwise, big news on my end is that I sent the tracks for the Ram Dass album off to mastering yesterday, which is like a huge milestone. For those of you who know about music making, you'll totally get what I'm talking about. And those who don't know what mastering is, and you're like, what the hell are you talking about? It's kind of like the last step in making the music. You know, you do all this stuff to record it and mix it. And then at the end, you do what's called mastering, which is sort of like a final pass to do, like, you know, all sorts of little EQ and tricks to kind of get all the tracks to sit together and to sound good, ideally on all different systems, you know, people's crappy earbuds to super hi-fi systems. But as you can tell, it's because it's that final touch you do on it, it's super important. And there's no one way to do it. It's a matter of taste. There's infinite ways. And you often have somebody else do it, or not. I mean, I like to, and that's just pretty standard practice because you're kind of getting fresh ears on it and you're getting someone who hasn't heard the mixes up to this point. And for myself, you can get too close to it and you lose perspective, and it's really hard to figure out how to take it from that last step to its final place. And so I often send it off to a mastering engineer, and that's a really, really important person that you select and that relationship you have with them, and their matter of taste and their skill. So it's very nerve-wracking, but it's also very exciting because it's a big milestone of sending that stuff off. So I'm looking forward to that process. But truth be told, the actual mastering process is sort of high stress to me because, you know, imagine someone sends you back a mix and you're just listening, right? And obviously it's going to sound potentially a little different, but you have to figure out what's different, if you like it, if that's consistent across systems, and then translate back some notes, typically obviously with words, saying, you know, I think that's a little too warm, or the 800 hertz is a little weak. But you also want to be correct because, you know, these words are just representing feelings and they're representing actual knobs that they're going to turn over on their end. And you don't want to screw it up. You don't want to say something that's wrong or incorrect. So it's sort of like poetically conveying a message and notes that is, well, you know, it's tricky. And it's high stress for me because you're recognizing that these are the final things you will do, and that will be the record of the record, so to speak, that will live for time immemorial. But it is exciting, and I have a lot of gratitude that the process has gotten to this place and that things are moving along. So I'll keep you updated on that. And also, I also noticed there are a couple more signups for the Esalen retreat, which is super exciting because I just don't want you to miss out on this. If you have the opportunity to duck away the weekend before Thanksgiving, November 16th through 18th, pop in on a Friday, grab the shuttle, come down to Esalen, hot spring up with us, dive into some deep meditation and music experiences, lots of music, obviously, and overlooking the Pacific Ocean, Big Sur. Oh my God, it is so amazing and powerful and nourishing. So if you're feeling that calling, I'm just here to give you that little push to say, check it out, sign up. All that, the live dates, Esalen, all that stuff's at eastforest.org, and click on the appropriate tab. So let's get into this. It's a beautiful day here in Boulder. This was a few weeks back when Matt Cochran gave this speech, and you know, sit back. It's like a sort of like a little poetic radio play. This is Matt Cochran at the Harvest Fest. I'm not going to do an end tag after this one because this is just sort of a little bonus episode. And the music you're going to hear in there is from all sorts of different things. The background music. It's there's something that's actually from my old podcast that's now defunct. That's another story for another time. There's another piece at the end I really like that was actually a soundtrack for a short film that I would like to actually release at some point. And there's something else. There's a couple other things in there, some music. Anyway, I'm probably talking too long. This is Matt Cochran. Enjoy.
The following talk was written for the Boulder community for the 2018 Harvest Festival. It's titled, Boulder's Dreaming 2, A Mythic Look at Place. From a raven's point of view, feathering about high in the blue sky, the town of Boulder has a curiously beautiful shape. It's cast in green pastures, and this town is a sweeping symbol, a wisping paw print, a vast petroglyph, an elemental design. You could say it has its own mythic imprint. There's a phrase called genius loci. It's an old word, an archaic manifestation. It means the spirit of a place, as if each place has its own presence. Ancient cities were built with this in mind, hence the sacred geometry of a city echoed the specific geography. A place was, of course, considered alive, its indwelling spirit carefully attended to. People living within it, grew with it, and knew at least something of its nature. The collaboration between a people and a place was as weaved and flowing as a braided river, felt as a great wind storming through, rippling the flags of life. Quite literally, we informed each other. By adapting to a place's patterns and character, life might bear more fortune than tragedy. Like two people holding hands, the touch ensured a shared love. I'm sure we all sense this to some degree, even act upon it in our own small ways. I've spent a life trying to get better at understanding the places I live in. Yet, no matter how far I go out in that direction, in the end, I'm steered back to the center of human community with perhaps a little foolishness, but hopefully mixed in with a drop of wisdom. Stories about places have been told as long as we can remember, because they embody an ethic that respects the full range of nature. A few years back, I was up on the mountain, Divide Lake area, that separates East Fork from West Fork, Boulder Creek. I'd been up there solo for a bunch of days, no food, just tuning in. I wandered off from my campsite by the lake and was walking in my own world, looking at mountain lion and bear paw claws where they scored the aspen trees. I wandered through the forest for hours and was surprised when I came out suddenly to a clearing. There before me was a view I'd never seen before, one I didn't recognize. Looking down, I saw a sweeping desert landscape. And amazingly, in the middle of it, green fields, trailing in and out of curving sandstone walls, and tucked amidst all that, a hidden village. It looked like a lost jewel. I thought of the Shire in Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, and the secreted Rivendell, the protected seat of the elves where many different races came to counsel about the great darkness in the world. Standing there with my mouth open, I was bewildered, trying to figure out what I was looking at. I was in this altered state until it finally dawned on me I was looking at Boulder, our own town. I kept staring, wondering how this could be, and flooded by emotion as the spell slowly vanished. Somehow, I'd just glimpsed behind a veil. It immediately and irrevocably changed my lone wolf soul. I knew instantly that I was a part of a bigger mythic story. I felt it viscerally, knew it without thinking. Here in Boulder, you could say we're in the grip of some wild being, nested up, getting ready to fully fledge. How do we live into this place in the modern era when so much is changing and much of our technology distracts us from full awareness? How might we include each other and this place into our sensibility and idea of community? It has to be more than a political fight or growing food or caring for a piece of property. More than a town hall meeting, moving cattle, or supporting each other's businesses. After all, a relationship requires tending, and of course the desire to get closer needs to be present. Open our senses further to another, and along with vulnerability and fear may come a deeper sense of belonging. A few years back, I was walking along a local waterway in February. Cold, clear blue, and silence. Rounding a curve in the creek, I came across a cat on its side as it was leaning lazily over the bank, playfully trying to catch air bubbles flowing beneath the iced edges of the waterway. I crouched so as not to scare it, but of course it sensed me anyways. Ever so slowly raising its body, she turned her head eyes sweeping past my stillness, then returning until they locked with my own. Startled, I realized she wasn't a domestic cat, not even feral. The tufted ears, the rugged striping, the piercing eyes itself told me a different story. Her head turned away from me in the same slow motion, and then, like an arrow released from a bow, she suddenly flew away, running upstream into the brush faster than I could blink. It was only then I noticed her white stubbed tail, a bobcat. A week later, I was walking near that creek again, snow now dusting the grasses and blanketing the north sides of the Navajo sandstone. I heard ravens calling behind me, smiled as I saw them dive and soar up on the ridge from a lone pinyon pine. Then below, running effortlessly through the snow upslope, was a sprinting cat, its thick fur paws splayed out like snowshoes, and of course the ravens plunging and hooting at it, but the bobcat again in her element. In my mind, the place we live in is in alliance with the big cats. In winter, I've run dream groups here for years, listening to the stories that come to all of us as we sleep. I consider it an old kind of wisdom. And not long ago, many people in town were dreaming about mountain lions. Mountain lions were also literally showing up at the edges of town. Yet in one dream, we were all here, just as we are now, sitting casually around, though down in the field a bit closer to the creek, this Boulder community. And amidst and among us were a whole family of mountain lions moving about. It was a full community gathering, you see. The big cats had come in from the literal edges to the dreaming heart of the town along Boulder Creek, our lifeblood. I've learned that sometimes when many people are dreaming the same thing, it can be the place itself, that indwelling spirit speaking, personifying itself, displaying its nature. The nature of Boulder, after all, is playful, powerful, elusive, dangerous, beautiful in its nonchalant grace. It has a leaping, moving quality, a watchful, carefully hidden sort of quality. Sustenance is cached in places that may take us years to find. We catch this presence here and there, but when we think we've seen it, only a wake, a ripple mark of something vanished remains. Stumbling across that bobcat was and is a waking dream for me, evidence of reality. Boulder behind that veil again. What exists between us and getting to know the place we live in is simply a frontier, a threshold, an ephemeral border. You and I live at this frontier with our daily hardworking lives on the land and our wilderness wanderings beyond. Locking eyes with this bobcat was like looking through that frontier mirror, the silent regard staring back, the agile awareness, the playful survival. Knowing the nature of a place can help explain both the challenge and blessing of being here, as we know what sort of creature we're cozied up with. Life lives and thrives on this edge where we humans and the wild meet. Just look to the songbirds that flock to our gardens and pastures, butterflies and bees that feast on our flowers, the geese, black-faced ibis, the sandhill cranes that peruse our ponds, the crickets rubbing their wings at dusk with the bats above, deer drawn closer to the green grass. Life arrives because of our domestic practicality at these places we tirelessly craft. It is this precise frontier right out our front door where our future shimmers, a way forward that walks, fingers to feathers, feet to paws, with an instinct for the path ahead. Most of my life I thought it was one or the other, civilization or wilderness. But really, isn't it about where the two touch, this trembling bond and delicate contact? How do we make dreams more real? And how do we make reality more dreamlike? What can happen if we trust the wild intelligence of this place that holds us? What happens if we peer through the big cat's eyes and purr with the beating heart of their vitality? However it goes, it's important to remember a place is also much more than one dream. And these days, the dreams I'm hearing about are about foxes and fire. But a place is also more than just the dreams themselves. A few years back, one brilliant spring, I saw on the broad height of Durfee Mesa a huge face, a watcher in the rock. Two eyes inset as high alcoves. Below, a great downturned mouth as if sad, staring west, catching every sunset. All this set in the Navajo sandstone. Summer monsoons bled off the red siltstone above, staining the sandstone below, giving the watcher tracks of tears trailing down. As the watcher watched the world, so I watched the watcher. Compelled one day, I took two purple quartz crystals and climbed up his sad and solitary wise face. 200 feet up, I placed one crystal in each eye, a purple radiance catching that last fire of the day. It was a simple gesture done unthinkingly. Later, in early winter, with a blanket of snow, I saw the frown was upturned at the edge, a nuanced smile I'd missed. I later learned Grant called this face the smiley frown because from a different perspective, further up, lower Boulder Road, you can see his perfect half smile. And a few springs later, ravens nested in his left eye like a rowdy wink. The watcher in the rock became more to me than what I first perceived. And a place itself can do that, slow to reveal its true expression or us slow to see it. But like us, a place is ever changing, arriving from many different directions at once, growing in character, adapting to the force of nature. To live into a place is to understand its complete geography of presence. Boulder's nature is multifaceted and shifting, with many layers of personality, yet each one of us, with our unique relationship to this place, enables its full character to come forth. The tragedy of the modern world is not just our separateness from nature. It is that the land misses us terribly, our humanity, our playful human attention, our quiet love. Each footfall a prayer, our singing in the canyons, our tears and laughter at its stunning beauty. This has been forgotten, this deep weave of sentience. Where does a place begin? And where do we end? Not only does the physical geography define us, but the very elements shape us. These mountains are at our backs. These canyons are at our feet. The water itself, Boulder Creek, Deer Creek, Bear Creek, Sand Creek, Sweetwater, sing us together just by moving through. We're windswept, infused, and washed by fast-moving storms. The land reveals us in a lightning flash, while the elements erode us into who we are. This is nature's attention. Can you live with this soft, sedimentary awareness, the patterned land always speaking and vanishing on your periphery as you plant the seeds, change the water, feed the animals, raise the children, build your home? If we keep sharing our stories of the land with each other, won't we come to know ourselves better? Our community includes the place that holds us, the very ground upon which we dwell. We are always in this collaboration of human and wild, witnessed by stars. We have nothing to lose by moving closer, and in fact, everything to gain. See, this land speaks in whispers, and there are pathways too intricate to imagine that can lead us into an unimagined and thriving future, no matter the uncertainty of the world. What happens when we stretch out our black feathered wings and fly across the frontier? Or leap quick as a mountain cat across the high ledge? It's a mythic territory out here. Isn't that why we came? But it's also a mythic territory in here, our hearts. Let's see where these two stories, inner and outer, walk together and carefully follow the tracks into a seamless future. A few years back, I'm standing in the desert, looking at the sand at my feet. I look up, a raven sweeps down in that graceful, arching way, wings spread, its obsidian beak like an arrow right between my eyes. I fall back and wake up from a dream. The dream is reality. And be aware, because Boulder is dreaming too. Thanks for listening.